You tried your best, and you failed miserably. The lesson is, never try.
Welcome, coaches, to the Talking Split podcast. I am Rob Kohler, joined by Nick Mihai. Welcome, Nick.
Thanks for having me. Just quickly, I've tangled up my red cord, so now I'm going to have to commit to this and stay in this position. Anyway,
it's unfortunate. I've got the dodgy chair, as it turned out, when I walked in and I just slowly started descending. Zoe, welcome to you as well.
Thank you. Everything's working perfectly over here.
The last person in the room has got everything that's working.
Most organised, yep.
This is vintage us straight off the bat. Hey, thanks everyone for joining us once again. Of course, you can follow along on socials. I haven't asked for ages. Please leave a rating and review if you could. It helps me deal with the crazy during the day that I can go on every now and again and go, oh, people do like the podcast. It's fantastic. So if you could do that, that'd be fantastic. Obviously, you can follow along on socials, share the pod with everyone else around the place. That would be fantastic. A little bit out of order with what we're going to do this today. So I'm just going to throw something out there to begin with, and then we'll sort of unpack it. But I want you to keep this front of mind if we can. So this will be just the social split talk for now.
Something to post on Facebook. Let's go.
It's like me on Twitter.
Okay, so this has been around for a long time, but I've got to do a little bit of reading, unfortunately, on this one, so bear with me as I fumble through the words. So, there was once a businessman who was sitting by the beach in a small village. As he sat, he saw a fisherman in a small rowing boat coming towards the shore, having caught quite a few big fish. The businessman was impressed by the fisherman and asked, how long does it take you to catch so many fish? The fisherman said, oh, just a little while. So the businessman said, why don't you stay a little longer at sea and catch even more, astonished by the fact that he was coming back in so quickly. The fisherman said, this is enough to feed my whole family. The businessman then said, so what do you do for the rest of the day? And the fisherman said, well, I usually wake up early in the morning, go out to sea, catch a few fish, go back and play with my kids. In the afternoon, I take a nap with my wife. And the evening comes, I join my friends in the village for a drink, and we play guitar, sing and dance throughout the night. The businessman offered a suggestion to the fisherman. I could help you to become a more successful person. From now on, you should spend more time at sea and try to catch as many fish as possible. When you have saved enough money, you could buy a bigger boat and catch even more fish again. Soon, you will be able to afford to buy more boats, set up your own company, your own production plant for canned food and distribution network. By then, you could have moved out of this village where you can set up a headquarters to manage your other branches. And the fisherman said, and after that, and the businessman laughed heartily and said, after that, you can live like a king in your own house. And when the time is right, you can go public and float your shares in the stock exchange and you'll be rich. And the fisherman said, well, what after that? And the businessman said, after that, you can retire and you can move to a house by the fishing village, wake up early in the morning, catch a few fish, then return home to play with the kids, have a nice afternoon nap with your wife. And when the evening comes, you can join your buddies for a drink, play the guitar, sing and dance throughout the night. And the fisherman said, well, isn't that what I'm doing now? So, with that in mind, and again, I've shamelessly ripped that off the internet. It popped up a couple of times in my feed. What we're looking at today is how to stop chasing the quick fixes and the trends in our coaching. And it is something that we do a lot. We do have to evolve as coaches, and this isn't anti-innovation and anti-involvement. This is pro-thinking, and the argument is kind of trends get adopted really quickly. In the coaching space in particular, like every time there's an NCAA tournament, NBA finals, anything going on, it feels like we're about to see what is played out on that stage start to infiltrate what happens in our coaching space as well. So it does change really quickly. Social media's got a bit to do with that because everything's so accessible now, of course. You get to see, oh, here's a breakdown of, you know, the Cleveland Cavaliers 1-3-1 zone defense that they played. And it's like, cool. Like it's great, but it doesn't always apply. And sometimes we can chase a lot of rabbits without actually catching the rabbit because we're trying to do a lot of different things without being able to go into one thing. So where the trends come from, I suppose, is a big part of what we look at to start off with, and that is usually international basketball. But remembering senior international basketball looks very different to junior basketball that the vast majority of us are probably dealing with. And to be fair, it probably even changes to senior basketball that we're involved with domestic. Like you're in this world at the moment, Nick. Like I'm assuming your playbook is ripped shamelessly from the NBA.
Yeah, very similar. I mean, I've also spoken to some coaches and stuff in the NBL and things like that as well. And it's funny that you mention that too, because not too long ago, oh, this might be a story time actually.
Gone early.
That's where all my thought process comes from, just from stories, like sense, yeah. Just a walking story. But anyway, we were struggling to get into our actions and things like that for youth league, and my brother assists with me as well. And I said, look, just take a look at the playbook, what works, what doesn't work, and we'll go from there. And then he looked through it, and then he called me the next day, and he goes, Nick, there's like 11 offenses in this. He goes, I can't keep up with it all, and if I can't do it just sitting here watching the video and stuff, like how are they going to remember all this stuff on the floor? And then we peeled it back, and then all of a sudden they started to play better, and we're like, oh, that kid's actually pretty good. Like, they're pretty good. They might be NBL one year. Who knows? So we do tend to look at the NBA, look at NBL and go, oh, that's a really cool action. I want to throw that in. That's a great way to get a shooter open. And then we end up doing too much, and we end up stripping away again anyway.
Yep, which is a common problem, I feel like, with coaches. Mm-hmm. Like, it's, oh, if I just run this play, this will fix my problem. It's like, it doesn't usually work that way. And Zoe, you're in a unique space again, obviously, because you're in the junior development space effectively. Like, how do you do that knowing that your job is not to teach your kids an offense necessarily?
Yeah, it's, I think for us in terms of staying on top of trends, it's important that we do, because if we've got some of our older athletes about to step into the senior space and there are the trends, that, like at the moment, everyone's running split game. Like high post catch, playing off the splits. They need to be able to do that. But a big part of what we have spoken about in our department is we've got to teach them to be better basketballers so they could go into any trend. So we can't just focus on that one element of concepts or play. We've got to be able to be ready for, because something will come next. It won't be long, actually. Split games lasted longer than I thought it would. Mm-hmm. Something will be, you know, we might be back to horns or, you know, who knows. Yep. But so we've got to be ready for that and set our athletes up for the best opportunity to be able to step into those environments. I remember not that long ago when flow was the standard across the board from seniors all the way down, which from a uniformity perspective was great.
Yep.
But then when those coaches moved on and a new system came in, there were a lot of athletes that could not play in anything other than flow. When you had to read and react to different scenarios, they just couldn't get it. And it ended some careers, or just when I say careers, like the amount of time that they could play at a good level. So, it's important to stay on top of it. But I think teaching athletes to be more conceptual rather than system, I think, is really important.
Yeah, because there's a genuine difference between a trend, which, I mean, we'll say flow and split game as an example of that, and that everyone's doing it, compared to a principle. Like, principle, yeah, is something that's always been there. Like, a principle might be, in transition, we want our lane runners to run wide, we want our big to rim run, and if not rim run, drag into an on-ball screen. Like, that's a principle.
Four-point line spacing.
Yeah, those sorts of, like, they're principles that I think you could play in any system and those things would hold universally true. Whereas trends tend to be a little bit more specific, I suppose, and the danger with that is it does pigeonhole some kids into, if you can't play off that elbow, if you're a post player and you don't have the footwork to play off that and you don't have the foot speed to play off that, you probably can't play anymore because you're not ever in that position. Like, you're always in a position where you have to lift up to the elbow, where your best asset might be at the charge circle.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. Or it goes the other way and it brings – it was one of the light bulb moments for me, I guess, at the Panathinaikos game.
Yep.
Was – how little they played off the high post because they had genuine bigs and they just sat them around the charge circle. If they didn't get it, then they were in the low post.
Low post, yeah.
And that's where they played. And so it was like, well, what are we doing? Why are we sending our bigs? And especially like in my, I guess, situation where it's generally young bigs, so they're just learning to walk and breathe and not fall over and figure out their bodies and start to grow into their coordination. We're then making it difficult for them by sending them away from the basket so they can be less successful. And so I think when you're talking about trends, or, you know, you watch something and an action and you like it, an offense and you like it and you think you want to put it in, first thing you have to do is align it with your athletes. If it doesn't suit your athletes, you could have the best offense in the world. If it doesn't suit your athletes and their skill set, it's not going to be successful, and then you're going to get frustrated, then you're going to add another offense. And by the end of the year, you're going to have, you know, 20 different offenses, none of which are being run well.
Or 11.
Yeah, or 11. I was going to say 11, but I didn't want to.
Thought I'd throw that in there really quick.
11 is not significantly better than 12 for those wondering. Like it's, but that is a genuine concern, I think, is that there's almost like a fear of missing out. Like if you don't have things in, you get pressure from potentially your players, your parents, other coaches within your program. I can't believe you don't have this baseline out of bounds in, or I can't believe you don't have this offense in, because this offense will be the solver of all problems along the way. And it's not usually like that. Like I think every offensive set would be designed to play into your strengths and minimize your weaknesses. Mm. So if you don't have a three-point shooting team, there's probably not much sense in having an offense that is going to revolve around three-point shooting as an example. So I think that's part of the challenge. I would probably go a step further, Zoe, and it's like if you see an action that you want to put in, no problems, but what can you take out at the same mm-hmm. time? Because that might be the trade-off in that, hey, I really want to get this flare screen action in, but to get this flare screen action, we're going to have to take out the down screen action because we can't have both at the same time.
But the reason for that is because the amount of decisions you have to teach within one action. So let's take the drag screen. What do you do when it's a hard show? What do you do when it's a switch? What do you do when you double the ball handler? They're all different reactions to that. They're all things that need to be taught, and ideally you want your players to be able to do that without you instructing them on the floor either. You can't just go, we'll put in the drag, we'll put in the stag, we'll put in the double drag, we'll put in the cross screen, down screen, we'll put in the Spain action. Like they need to know what to do with these actions.
Yep. Otherwise, and it's not just nothing. The person with the ball or the screener that are the only ones that have to Correct. Then read and react off that. The players off the ball have to react off that as well. So,
and what's the first side? And then what do you do on the Correct. Second side, right? What's like the, it just keeps going.
So I think it's a little bit dangerous, I think, to be looking at, especially when you're talking about, say, watching the NBA and then putting that in with your under-12s. Yep. I think that's a
so what's the difference then between staying current and chasing a trend? Because they're probably two separate things, but I think all coaches are conscious that they don't want to be considered, they haven't kept up with the game as it goes through. So how do you find the balance, I suppose, is the question.
Well, I think one of the things that's, I suppose, you can look at what those trends are and take the concepts out of them and teach those rather than the offense itself.
Yep.
So if there is a pin down, for example, like teach not only how to use it and how to make the reads off of it, but how to defend it as well. And then start layering what all those concepts are. And you're still staying up with the trend. You're still teaching the parts of the trend or the offense that you're looking at, but you're not teaching it as an offense. And so then, like I said before, if that still happens to be the go-to offense when the athlete steps into, say, senior basketball, they know how to run it. They know how to be effective rather because they've broken down that action and the decisions off it however many hundreds of times and, you know, playing into sort of continuation rather than A to B, B to C, C to D. So I think that can help, if a coach is worried about being asked, like, you know, what's the current trend offensively? Well, you know it still and you are still teaching it. You're just teaching it a different way.
Yeah. Yeah, a good example is something that I've invested in this year is just playing directly out of the drag screen, which has come with complications. Like it's made it difficult for us to win as many games, but my theory is on it at a very blanket level, whatever they go to, college basketball, NBA one, whatever it is they go to, there's going to be a drag screen. So they have to learn how to, if you're a guard, you need to know how to use it. You need to know how to roll if you're a big. And the wings need to know how to move. So then we just tweak and change the way we move off the ball. Is it loaded? Is it empty side? And things like that. So that's trending, I believe, in my opinion. Like the drag screen's definitely increased.
Well, like the on-ball. Like, because effectively a drag screen is an on-ball screen, 100%. Right? So
the you're either dragging up or dragging behind. Yeah.
The on-ball is forever.
Yeah, like it'll never go.
It will never go away. Yep. So there's trend number one. Like if you want to lean into something in terms of teaching, learn to play out of the on-ball. Your athletes, if they can play out of the on-ball screen, whether they're big or little, they'll be able to play around the world and be successful. So there are some, I guess, actions that are not non-negotiables, but they're not going anywhere, you know. Yeah. Like,
well, let's unpack a couple of those then, because on-ball screens is definitely one, whether it be wing, slot, or seam, depending on who you talk to, you know, the great terminology debate.
Middle, I heard a new one today.
What do you got?
Pro line.
What's pro line?
It's the seam.
Oh. What?
All right, who are we blaming, Brenton or Nando?
Who do you think?
Brenton.
Pro line.
No, apparently when you watch – I don't watch the NBA because I don't begrudge anyone who does, but I can't stand to watch it.
So you haven't watched the Knicks get through?
No.
In a sweep?
No.
Okay, I just wanted to put that on. You're going to delete it out of the podcast.
No, it's staying.
Okay, beautiful.
Apparently there's like a line down the seams, and that's what they call it.
Yeah, cool. Anyway, so on-ball screens not going anywhere. Off-ball screens not going anywhere. They will always remain in some capacity. Cutting will always remain in some capacity. You know, really, what else is there? Like now you're sort of starting to get into the nitty-gritty of, you know, run wide, rim run, those sorts of things. Like they're probably the non-negotiables, I would suggest. Like cutting, as you said, is, you know, whether it's off a screen, but again, that's more off-ball screening rather than is cutting necessarily. But some of the things hold universal too. If you can't pass, well, you probably can't play. Like, and similarly, if you can't catch, you probably aren't going to have a huge amount of success in the sport either. So what matters more? Teaching the action or teaching the skill set. Now, there's ways to do both, of course. Like you can have, you know, both the soft and hard shell tacos. Like it's fine. Like it's you can tell what I'm having for dinner tonight. Yeah. However, but that's the challenge of coaching is not necessarily chase the action all the time and worry more about, well, what does my player look in this action? And I think that's the hardest part of coaching. And it's something I'll touch on a little bit later in the pod in particular. There's almost a mentality of, oh, we play games at training. Like we have small-sided games at training and we do like little actions at training. It's like, yeah, but are you coaching still? Like, and I'm not saying you need to sit there and berate and, you know, you have to do this and, or anything like that because you absolutely shouldn't. But are you trying to unpack? Are you trying to ask, you know, leading questions for the players to help with their understanding of it? Or are you just sitting back and saying, hey, they're playing 3-on-2. This is pretty good. And I'm happy to just sit there and do nothing. Because it's funny how often I'm told, oh, we play lots of games at training. It's like, okay, what is the game though? And are you still doing something? Because you are still responsible for crafting that environment to get the action or the read or the understanding that you want from your player. And that might be as simple as, like, I mean, Zoe, you did something on the weekend, I think it was, where you didn't allow them to do something, which forced something else. I've gone completely blank on what it was. Either way,
I don't really allow him to do much.
No.
Was it the second touch?
It might have been.
Maybe?
Yeah, it might have been.
Yeah, so like we did 4v4 free play.
Yep.
And just no on balls, no dribble handoffs. And then after a while said they can only score off second touch.
Yep.
Was that it?
I don't think it was, but either way, it doesn't really matter. But it's not a bad example.
We can take that out.
Yeah. Not a bad example the same though, because what you are inherently looking for is quicker ball movement.
Yeah.
And without having to come in and say, I want quicker ball movement, like you've now started to put the premise in their mind of, hey, I need to cut a little bit harder to get open so that the ball can find me. I need to make a pass and then move or get someone else open or the ball can come back to me.
Well, and have recognition of the other players on my team.
Absolutely.
Who has touched it already and who hasn't, who can score, who can't. Like
I warm up with a ball movement drill as well. I stole it from Nick Adesevic, but basically it's 4-on-4. It's like cutthroat.
Yep.
But it's just first five passes, you can't dribble.
Yep. I think I stole it from him as well.
Yeah. you got to lead to the ball, cut to the basket so you can't stand still. After five passes, you can take 2 dribbles per catch.
Yeah.
So it just gives them an opportunity to cut. If not, now you can try and drive and find it. It just warms them up, forces the ball movement without me saying, hey, pass ball to the movement. Open player, please.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, actually, I just remember what it was. It wasn't the 4v4. It was no back cuts.
Oh, yeah.
Like as simple as no back cuts. That is straight away a little bit of language that now tells you two stories. Defensively, You can climb into that thing with your heart content because you know at no point, even if they back cut, are they allowed to get a catch and scored on. So that tells you straight away, here's how I need to defend. But it also told the offense, you can back cut if you want, but that needs to set up your forward lead. It's not a back cut to get open and a score, but what it might do is start to manipulate some things. And what we saw is a little bit of an evolution over the course of the training session. Initially, it was almost like the defense didn't believe you.
Yeah.
Because it's like, well, no, they're going to go back door. It's like, yeah, well, they probably are, but they're not allowed to score on that, so you may as well climb in, which started to annoy the offense because they're like, well, now I'm having to deal with this level of physicality that I'm not used to dealing with where it's not just hand in the lane, it's like full body in the lane, and it almost became a little bit of a wrestling match to get open, which was great because now we start to see a little bit more physicality at play. Now we start to see them trying to think about angles. It then started to put more pressure on the passer. Because now it wasn't as simple as, I'll just throw it back door as soon as I see that person out. Now it became just a little bit more heated and it's like, well, they had to throw to an advantage. Now their solution was, we'll just lob it over the top of where the defense is playing, and that's not the solution we were really after. But that's okay. Like it's what they perceived in all of that. What we did start to see by the end is the offense wouldn't necessarily back cut, but they would take a step towards the basket, drop and seal, and get open on the other side of the defense. So instead of catching
solving.
On, yeah, yeah, like instead of catching it on the wing, which you know would be normally what they would do, they were catching it inside the wing, and now the defense had to try and get over the top of that. And again, this is kind of the dance of offense and defense that you go through. Is that like for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction as to what will potentially come next. It is. That's what happens, and it was actually interesting all the way through to see which kids could problem solve that and which kids needed to be led to that solution. The biggest thing though, and credit to all the coaches that were there, is that they still coached. They didn't just sit there and say nothing and said, oh, you guys figure it out for yourselves and I'll just, you know, cheerlead onto the side. What they did a good job of was letting it play out and then grabbing the player afterwards and having the chat with, how did that feel? Was there anything you could do differently? What would you do if you had your time over again? And you go down that path with them. And for mine, that is a far better way of getting a gauge on their recognition. But also, it was a lot easier when you went to some scrimmage stuff later and you told the defense to climb in. They did. And funnily enough, back cuts happened because they do.
But that's okay too, because we want to teach that recognition of when to back cut as well.
For sure. So it's not to say take it away completely. It was just take it away for that moment in time to work on something else. But what we did notice is the level of physicality went up. Like now trying to get open, that was difficult to get open. So
are we talking more about, are we shifting to trends on defense? Is that what, is that a different
potential
conversation? Like
probably. Like the trend on defense at the moment is pack line still.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't change. Like high ball pressure and four people sag off.
Well, regionally.
Yes.
Internationally, no. Like we're about to head off to under 17s and I dare say that when we're coming up particularly against the Euros, they're climbing in and they're climbing in off the ball too. And so like – oh, sorry, regionally. Locally is more what I meant. I don't think Packline is setting our athletes up for their future in the game.
Yeah.
I think
so. That was a trend that came in probably about 10 years ago now, maybe eight.
The in line with dribble drive.
Yeah, it would have been around about the same time.
Especially the flow, right? Like it's to negate that sort of stuff.
Maybe even longer now.
It's been around longer than 8 years. Yeah. It's been around for a while.
But it's that's not how international basketball is played. You know, some places do play like that, but you need to have both. And for mine, being up in the lanes, being up on the ball, and obviously plugging off the ball is fine. But it's easier, I think, if they've got that in their skill set to pull them back if they were to step into a senior space who are pack line, it's easier to pull them back than it is to push them forward if all they've ever done is pack line.
Do you think they should be taught both? Like understand, like on-ball coverage, right? You usually have your aggressive one and your passive one.
Yeah.
Do you think the same thing should be for shell defense?
Well, for mine, if you're in the lane, so how we operate is where we deny one position away from the ball.
Yeah.
So we've got the...
I remember because you made me teach it as a hub lead, but anyway.
Low wings, seams and point. They're our positions on the floor. So, for example, if it's like a two-guard front and it's seam and seam, we're actually off the ball. We're not in denial there because there's the point in between. So you're two positions off because we always want to try and occupy the nail. Now, for mine, if you're denying one position away, the rest are pack lining.
Mm.
They're off the ball. There's an element of that that's being taught. Maybe not so much in terms of like flat triangles, one pass away from the ball, but there's still at least an element of that being taught. What's not being taught is the denial positions in pack line.
Yep.
So I think, yeah, if you're going to go one way or the other, you go down the denial route because, again, the knowledge of, two positions away, I'm packing the paint or building the wall or whatever you want, or the shrink the floor, however everybody's using it, there's still elements of that being taught. So I think that then will help them if they do step into a pack line position, and then obviously climbing into the ball is fairly consistent.
We kind of, I'm going down a rabbit hole here, but like with it's funny, the trend also shifts depending on where you look as well. When we're talking about looking at different senior leagues, EuroLeague probably is that more pack line, right? I've seen a couple of games that look more pack line. I don't watch as many as you guys, but like but NBA is more denial.
Yeah,
right. It's more is it dependent on
zone in the NBA.
Pardon?
You also can't zone.
Yeah, exactly. So
like they do, but you know, you technically can't zone. So what is the only other string you can pull?
Mm.
Like if you can't zone, you may as well be aggressive.
Yeah.
That's kind of the thing that it goes to. And even then, like we saw Toronto Raptors with Nick Nurse going back, like they used a boxer mine in the NBA finals. Like it worked for them in that sort of space. So it is interesting here. But again, remembering, and this is the usual retort to any complaint that you get from someone, why aren't you doing this? It's like, well, I don't have those players.
Mm.
Like I'm coaching junior basketball. I'm not coaching in the NBA. Yeah,
I don't have Giannis.
Yeah, exactly. You can run whatever you want when you got Wemby. There's a fairly reasonable chance of being successful. I don't have those players. But you also have a little bit of a duty, I think, as a junior coach to put the skill development side of things first.
So where are you looking for that trend? Are you going boomers and opals? What are you doing? How can I trickle this down to my space? Is it I'm looking at my NBL1 or youth league team?
Yep.
Like this is the sort of thing that runs through my head. Rob. I nearly said Sarah.
That's how flustered you've got him.
Yeah, got me rattled. I feel like I'm talking to Sarah right now.
There have been plenty of times I've looked pregnant. However, I'm not at that point in time. So the skill development one's an interesting one because it kind of depends on the space that, one, they're occupying at the moment, but two, where they want to end up. So that's the challenge. If you were to survey every 9-year-old kid at the moment, where do you want to play basketball? NBA, WNBA is coming through for pretty much 95% of them, I would have thought. The hard part is a lot of what the NBA players do doesn't translate into junior basketball. And one, they can't perform it because they just don't have the body, the skill set or anything like that to be able to perform it. But two, it also doesn't apply. Like, do you need to be able to come off a drag screen in under 12s? Like, probably not. All you need to do is pass the ball and cut, and there's a fairly reasonable chance you'll get open because no defenders are good at jumping to the ball when they're 10 years old. And to be fair, they're not great at 18 either. But, you know, it's one of those things. You don't need that. So why spend all your time teaching something you're not going to need? And, you know, I was talking to a coach.
Well, hang on. When you say
they don't need it now?
So if we're saying go down the development pathway – and again, I'm not an advocate for on-ball screens in under 12s. So, but it's, you know, when you start stepping into 14s and 16s and 18s, it's...
I am, by the way.
And that's fine.
I am an advocate.
I'll give you my retort beforehand.
Yep.
Because my issue is, I think with that, in under 12s, if there's an on-ball screen, who's touching the ball? Only the kid coming off the on-ball. There is not a hope in hell they are throwing it to the roller. And those other three kids may as well be in the car park.
But that's the teaching part, right? Like it's a skill set that needs to be done. It's such a big part of our game.
Yep.
They need to start. It's part of our game, so we may as well teach it. It should be in line with spacing and things like that. I agree with you. Like I have the same things with my youth league players. They don't pass the ball either. But like, I still need to learn. That's the open player. That's the open player. Yep. No one's open. Maybe it's me. Like, yeah. That's all the process.
How many passes are there in a game of basketball compared to one ball screens? Well, I would say there's more passes.
Yeah, yeah.
So work on the passing.
I'm not saying.
Oh, yeah.
That's my preference, though. I would work on pass and cut rather than on ball screens as an example.
100%.
On that one. So talking to a coach who coaches international basketball, we were just having a chat about like under 12 basketball. He's like, oh, what's your rules on defense? It's like, well, we're not allowed to zone in certain leagues. You know, again, people try and find ways to manipulate that as best they possibly can. It's like also known as welcome to the world of Nick Mihai on a Monday morning.
It's called a reverse box and one, Rob, if you're wondering.
A reverse box and one. So is that like a four and one?
Yeah. Four match up and one zones. Yeah.
Yep. So, you know, we have that in under 12s. He's like, are you allowed to use on-ball screens? And like, well, we haven't said they can't. So, yeah, they do effectively. And he was saying, well, look, in our country, what we have is you put seven or eight concepts into a hat effectively at the start of the game and you just pull them all out. And whatever you pull out, they're your rules for that game. And that might be you are allowed to zone but only in the third quarter. That might be you are allowed to use on-ball screens but only in the first quarter. That might be you're in the bonus from the start of the fourth quarter for that whole quarter. And I thought, this is a real interesting. Like, straight away, my brain started spinning. It's like, oh, we can really screw with the sport in this sort of mentality. But then you start to put some rules around it. And it's like, actually, this is interesting because what you've done straight away is like, we don't care about winning here. Like, this is absolutely not this will not be a byproduct of a win. Like, you've put some constraints in where the coach has to think about it, but the other team now gets some exposure to it as well. So they get to see an on-ball screen. They get to see a zone defense. They get to see what it looks like when the other team's in foul trouble. Like, there's all these types of parameters that you can put around it that I think would actually test our kids a little bit more so that you do get a little bit of everything. Because my fear is, and we're talking under 12s, is that we teach our kids to play one way and one way only and they never get exposed to anything else. So that when they go to under 14s, they have to be taught almost a new sport by the time they hit under 14s. Now, skill development would always be my priority in 12s. Like, that's there's no shock there. But like, if you're going to say what's a defensive trend in under 12s, zone pressing.
100% it is.
Like, we see it in every game. Like, and there's part of me that says, yeah, okay. Like, it's not a bad thing to start understanding time and space and all those sorts of things. But how many zone presses have you seen in youth league this year? Like, if you were to say, like, what's the split between matchup defense and zone presses?
Oh, 90% matchup.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, like, so why aren't we teaching kids to defend better in the full court?
You know what I'm a bit tired of, and this is a little bit ranty.
Oh, would you like some theme music?
Sure.
I can give you mine if you want.
Oh, yeah. We haven't heard the Rob Rant song.
It's Rob's Rant. He's on the mic complaining about stuff he just don't like, from bad parking to soggy chips. Rob's Rant's on Talking Split.
So worried we weren't going to get the song.
Yeah.
We need to get this on camera because watching Nick dance to this is just amazing.
What's a vibe?
Yeah. I'm getting really quite tired of us feeling like we have to change the sport to account for people not dodging the system but trying to find loopholes and – you know, we brought in a zone ban to try and with the intention of more matchup defense, getting people to be more accountable 1v1 off the ball as well, having, you know, players not just stand under the basket and, you know, that's their own job, only job, you know, also being able to get our players to be able to offensively get into positions where they can actually score in, say, bottom age under 12s, because shooting threes at that age is pretty difficult. But that's all you can get versus a zone. So that comes in because so many zones we were seeing on a Friday night. And then, you know, we're seeing almost like, oh, well, if I can't zone, I'll press. And so the size 5 basketball comes in. Now, part of that was about scaling to the level of the athletes and the age of the athletes. Also about shot technique, which I think we've seen a pretty good improvement on since it's been in play. But part of it too was because they needed to, it needed to be easier for them to be able to pass through a press. And it's just, I don't know, I'm just a little bit like, why can't we just, you know, have a discussion and agree on what is best for the game and what is best for our athletes in terms of developing them and then run with it? Why, you know, I understand there's pressures. Everyone in this room that's on this pod right now, we've all coached juniors as well. So at all levels and of all ages, and understand the pressures of parents wanting to win or their even the kids wanting to win, and associations that have their, you know, quotas and things like that. We've all been a part of that. But if the majority of us step up and say, no, this is what's best for basketball, you might want me to win that game by pressing for 31 of 32 minutes, but I'm not going to do that. We might see a shift and we might see better defenders, more accountable defenders. But on the flip side, from an offensive perspective, I genuinely believe the IQ of our athletes will go up because now they are getting to a point where they're getting into things rather than turning the ball over in the backcourt every 2 seconds or, you know, the amount of work that you guys have to do every Monday of zone complaints is crazy. It's crazy the amount of zone that's still being played, that's being passed off as pack line or, you know, this
split help.
Yeah, it's just this one kid that doesn't get it. And, you know, and I understand that that's a genuine thing as well. Like, but when there's no instruction coming from the sideline to try and help them get to where they're supposed to be, what else can it be? And it's maybe I just wish that some coaches out there would spend more time the time they're spending on trying to find loopholes, spend that time on how you're going to develop your athletes within this framework for what's best for them.
Couple of things. First of all, amen. second of all, just to add to that as well, there's not many coming from the higher end. So the first and second teams, I'm not seeing them because why? They're probably more capable of getting out of trouble in those situations. It's happening more at the other end where development is even more important. Yeah. You could argue it's a more important thing to do it there as well.
Because what you're also then doing is making sure they stay in those levels.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
because you're not going to
– yeah, you're not going to move up if you can't.
But they are under pressures, right? Like they – or perceive pressure. I don't think associations say, hey, look, you know, we really want our 12 sixers to move up a few grades here. So.
No, probably not at that level, but I think qualifying for things like VC and the Classic and those sorts of things, like if you're ever going to see it, it's the last grading game.
True.
You know, when you're trying to qualify, that's when you tend to see it the most. And part of it is like that fear of missing out in that, oh, well, everyone else is doing it, so I better do it.
Mm.
It's like, well, that is a little bit of a trend straight away. And, you know, my mind goes to like when we coached against each other under 14s, whichever year it was, like you had a shuffle group. We taught shuffle as well, like, but that was more like get used to it because you're going to see this.
Yeah,
like learn how to
defend to win it. We have to go through them. Yeah. So let's try and
learn how to defend it. So the only way to get good at that is, and you know, again, poor coaching on my end because I didn't see the forest for the trees in that one as well.
But also there is a challenge. On top of that, like just add to it, you could zone back then.
Well, you could afford it. To be fair,
and like, I have changed into it.
yeah. Look, you can. To be fair. But this is, I think, the challenge is that there is that fear of missing out in that, oh, it happened to us, so we'll just do it to them. And it's like, well, is that good for your group though? Mm. Is this the right – and the thing I keep coming back to is when you do it, what's that feeling you've got in your gut? Like when you do it, when you say, hey, press, is that a good feeling you have in your gut when you're doing that? Or when you're saying, hey, you four match up and you just go and stand on the bar, do you feel good about that? And if that is a little bit of an F you to everyone else, then, you know, that's, I would argue, not a great feeling to have in the first place. But if you feel like this is ethically questionable, then that should probably give you your answer before you've even done it. And, like, to be fair, we'll go back a little bit of a step here. The reason Zoe got a little bit ranty on this one is because she's already had part of my harebrained idea during the week, which you got as well on Monday, Nick, which is we go to 4-on-4 for under 12s.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and... my theory was that you can't zone, you can't teach five-player offenses because, you know, there is no fifth player.
Harder to press.
Harder to press, more space for players to play into, higher scoring, more accountability. There's a whole range of reasons. And Zoe's first response was exactly that. Why do we keep having to change the sport to work around people that should know what the right thing is but choose not to do the right thing in that space?
It's the ones that choose not to do it that I'm angry at. I don't, you know, there's you know, parents that have had to step in and coach the team and stuff, and they don't know much about the game. And like, I'm totally understanding of that. We have heard people out loud talk about how they're dodging the system and how they're, you know, found this loophole and this is how we get around it. And again, spend that energy on figuring out ways to make your kids better instead of just trying to win these games through, you know, something that, you know, even – and when I say this, I don't mean this disrespectfully, but even in youth league isn't being played. Like, it's a change-up. It's not a – it's not your go-to or your staple. Well,
like I said, I'm not seeing a diamond press youth league. I'm not seeing it with Michael Davies' group either. They're not up and into it. They're playing match-up too.
Because it's run as change-ups
up
there. Like, you know, and that's –
whereas in under-12s, the inclination is to do it for a whole game.
Yeah.
Because that's what under-12s looks like. It's chaos anyway. Well, there's going to be kids that can't make decisions or make passes. Yeah, of course.
Just play into deficiencies.
And that's the challenge is, like, can we trend it the other way? And what would be required for us to trend this the other way? Is it a rule change? Is it a philosophical change? Like, what is it, a knowledge change?
It's a mindset change. Like, honestly, like, I've spoken to a few junior coaches. Actually, in the last couple of weeks, they've just been calling me and chatting to me. And I always answer the same way. We have a 30-minute conversation, and then I go, your players are your resume. Like, they're not – associations do not look back and go, how many wins they get last year in VJL5. No, they don't look at that. They go – where did they start from, these players? Where did they develop? What teams are they making now? Okay, they're moving up. Why are they moving up? They're coming from one area. That's the coach. Like, your players are the resume.
Are if the they kids get coming better, back? Are yes. they happy? Yeah. Was it a cohesive 100%. Parent group? Like, all those things. Like, development for mine still trumps everything. Like, if you want to try and win at the senior level, I have zero qualms with that whatsoever. Do
100%.
It however you 100%. Want to do it. Like, I'm quite okay with that. I've long and put that one to bed, I think, on my end too. As much as I've
they're still
to see
developing players. I don't want to open up a can of worms. Melbourne United are still developing players. Yeah, just absolutely. Saying.
But I remember coming out. I remember coming out of a game coaching in NBL 1, and we had to zone for the majority of the last quarter, and I felt dirty afterwards. Yep. But we were
like eating KFC, right?
Yeah,
like, tastes
good. Good at the time because we got the win, but now I feel gross. But yeah, it's like you said though, that sort of ethical question, but once you start to get into those levels as well.
Was it one game? I'm just curious. Just I want to unpack. Game. So we one
had,
game.
And in fairness, and we only had seven players.
And then after that, what did you do?
We went back to matchup.
Yep. And then worked on it during practice. Yeah. Like it's, yeah, of course, like that happens at senior level. But even then it's a one-off, like, hey, well, I've got to fix stuff, but I've got to prioritize the win today and develop tomorrow.
Yep. And I suppose, I mean, what's the solution to this? Do we get everyone those little wristbands with like the WWZD? Like, what would Zoe do? Like, and if they start pressing up the floor, like, it's nope. Like, that's not the time. Like, it's
there's not a chance anyone would wear any.
This is the thing.
I don't think they would be able to. They would allow a print of what would Mihai do?
Yeah, it's probably best we don't go down that path.
That's negligence.
Yeah, but that I suppose that is the challenge for a lot of our junior coaches is. You know, are you doing the right thing for now or are you doing the right thing for later?
And that's who are you doing it for?
Well, exactly right.
Because the win now is for you.
Yeah.
The win later is for them.
Yep. And that's the difficult trend is because there are tons of coaches out there and there are so many that do the right thing. And, you know, again, we were talking about something before we press record on this one where it's like we are talking about 0.001% of coaches that do this. And it comes across that way because there are 99.99, I think I've got the maths right on that one, doing the right thing. That do a fantastic job. And there are some coaches that I would absolutely sit there and say, hey, go watch that coach. Because it's not because they win games. It's got nothing to do with them win games. There is a level where you can put winning front of mind. But it is not in the junior range. And when I'm talking junior, I'm talking like junior juniors, like under 12s and even, to be honest, under 14s for mine. I would suggest your job is skill development and make the players better and make them fall in love with the sport, keep them safe, keep them healthy. Like, that is your priority. It is not, but I need you to play this game because we need to win this game.
because we like need to get qualify for clubs, or qualify for the classic, or qualify. And again, I'm not anti those things. I'm just saying that that can't be the priority. So if you're developing and you happen to then qualify for those things, great, great. But I've seen a lot of, particularly in the under 14 age group, athletes get completely shelved and not play because they've got to qualify for something. And I just find that I really dislike that.
Especially 14. So they have to qualify for a lot, right? Like there's a lot of pressure.
Top half, classic.
Yeah.
Classic.
Like I know there's some teams out there. I won't name them, but there are some teams out there that, you know, they lost one game. One coach was talking to me, one game, and then he's like, I've got to win this Friday. And I go, hey, didn't you just lose last week? Is that the only – yeah, he goes, but if I do that, it's third. And like, it puts a lot of pressure on a 12-year-old kid.
Yeah.
It does. And look, to be fair, I've been in this situation.
Mm.
And same. Where I had the pressure on and, you know, my only mindset was I've got to win. And it's only that I look back on it now and I think you're an idiot. Like, what were you thinking when you were going through all this? Now, is there an element where I have to experience that before I truly understand it? Probably.
Mm.
But this is also a cautionary tale for a lot of coaches. I've seen the repercussions of doing it the wrong way. Like, I've gone the short-term route plenty of times and I've seen how that's worked out. Whereas I look back to my long-term decisions that I've made and it's like, oh, actually, that's worked out far better.
Mm.
And yes, you need to have the clarity and the experience to be able to see what those can potentially look like down the road as well. But I think that it is one of those things that until you experience it, you probably don't truly understand it. What I'm hoping is this pod might be the experience that some of these coaches need in this space as well. It's
because this is the we are talking about a trend here. Like this is the where it's heading. Like it's I've got to shelve players and I've got to, you know, factor in and prioritize winning over development. Like that's a very that's a tightrope. It's not goalposts anymore.
Yeah,
well, it is. And you know, I can hand on heart say I ran an offense at under 14s that I 100% stole off Michigan State. Absolutely did. Like, but I look at how long it took me to teach that. It's like, you know what, I probably could have just gone drill like hand off on ball screen and that would have got me the exact same look out of it. Like, why did I have to run this long, complicated offense to get to that point? And again, it's only with hindsight and reflection on it that I sit there and it's like, yeah, I screwed that up. Like, but and, you know, thankfully I don't think it broke any players or anything like that. But, you know, that should be the goal is that are you leaving them in a better spot when you're done coaching those kids? And that is a trend that we need to start getting back in front, similar to the child safety trend. Like it has to be front of mind from coaches, parents, administrators, everyone. And the amount of times I have a coach groan at me because, oh, I've got to do the play by the rules training. Like, good. Like if you've come looking for sympathy, you are not finding it here. Do the right thing. And I've done it before. Yep, but it might have changed.
Because it does
constantly
change.
Constantly changes.
Always changes. Yeah.
Constantly. But okay. If you've done it before and you're doing it now, have you done something in between that gap where you sit there and it's like, oh, actually, I forgot about that? Like, it has to be front of mind with everybody. Like, if we have players leaving the sport because they've had a negative experience, then the sport ceases to function.
Mm.
Like, we have to be in that spot where we are doing the right thing for the right people, and the right people are our players.
And the players have a right to leave on their own terms, not because of something like a coach said or did or anything like that.
They just don't want to play anymore.
Yeah, I don't want to play. I want to go play footy. Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Yep. It's a genuine problem. So hopefully, I mean, I've probably had the opinion for a little while now that the best coaches are not the ones with the biggest playbook. They're the ones that teach the best.
Mm.
Like, and teach the simple stuff the best. And it's like, well, can you get your point out in 2 to 3 words or do you need a thesis to get there? Like, it's the amount of times you go to a training session and you see like 40 minutes in, the kids are still running around in hoodies. And it's like, what has gone on in this session that you are still running around in a hoodie? Like, unless you're in Ballarat.
They've only just started running.
That's kind of it. Like, the coaches had this big preamble about what went wrong in the game and what they're going to do and all this sort of stuff. Kids don't care. Like, they genuinely like touch on some things, sure. But they don't care. What they want to do is get moving. They want to play. They want to enjoy the sport. They want to socialize with their friends. They want to have fun with it. Like, why wouldn't we do more of that? And if that's the trend of time on task, when we were to look at a 60-minute session, if we can have them active for 50-odd minutes of that 60-minute session, if not a little bit more, and, you know, when I say active, just not standing around listening to someone talk, that's a better session for mine. Like, straight away, that's a better session for mine.
Well, Brian Gorgon says clarity is the new clever, right? Yep. Like, just be really simple. You don't have to have fancy words and big conversations. Just be clear, direct, and get them on the floor. Like, well,
and when you talk about like clarity and simplicity, so what would you say is a reasonable amount of, say, offenses to have in your playbook for under 16s, under 18s?
Three.
Yep.
Like, give, and one of those, in fact, all three of them should be able to work against matchup and zone.
Yep.
Like, it's, I remember coaching under 18s, however long it was ago now, and we had three. And we ran our zone offense more than any other offense out of any of them, even against matchup. Like, we just found it worked better for some reason. Yep. Like, I think that is a roundabout, because there is always something you can break down and teach within that.
Well, and with some counters, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Like,
yeah.
Some, yep. You know, that's, I agree. I think three with counters is about where, what you should aim for, because then it allows you to actually get good at those things, yep. As opposed to, you know, like I mentioned before, having 11 different yep. plays and not running any of them properly, or well, the skill sets within it.
Yeah,
properly.
And I think in under 12s, zero, in all honesty. And even leading into 14s, like I'm okay with some stuff in 14s, but I think in 12s, just let the chaos unfold.
Mm.
Like, the more you can teach some decisions passing at training
cut.
Sessions, yeah, well,
just passing cut.
To be honest,
because that does create the double gaps and it creates it driving does. Lanes and all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
If a player wants to go and screen someone off the ball, it's like, all right, like, it's go for it. Mm. Like, if you've come up with the decision in this because of what you've seen somewhere else, and you can apply it and go, hey, I think the defense could actually get caught up on a screen here, go screen. That's fine. I don't think that's a problem. So I would be very joystick off. It would be fair to say in under 12s. Like, don't be that coach. And that's a trend I think we really need to get into, our coaches. Like, yes, you can coach, but don't joystick coach.
Mm.
That's yeah. There's a real difference between the two, I think, because, yes, we want to give them instruction, direction, feedback, all those sorts of things, but we don't want to do everything for them.
Would you teach them what a way screen, drag screen and things are, but just not have them as a play call? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, just wouldn't tell them we're doing it.
Yep.
It's like, all right, two lines, line over there, line, or probably three lines, line over there, line here, line over there. All you're going to do is pass to that line, then go on screen someone and then just figure it out what happens. Defense on only the person coming off the screen to start off with.
Okay.
And yep. Now defense on the screener and the person coming off the screen. And now defense on all three players. And you just layer it and build it up, and eventually they'll see that. Again, in a training session, they'll see a similar shape in a game, and they'll just go and do it,
mm-hmm.
like, because it's what they do. Kids are, like, young kids in particular, they want to please, they want to be told good job. So
and the they more can retain a lot if you do it in that absolutely. Way, right? Like,
yeah, for sure.
But visuals, right? They absolutely. Need to see it, they need to feel it.
Yep.
That's how they pick it up, not through having group conversations and stuff.
Definitely. And that's the challenge, I think, for a lot of our coaches out there. It's like, what, actually, how much bang for buck are you getting at your training sessions? Like, are your kids walking out having learned something new every week? Now, they don't have to be completely fair. Like, not every drill has to be a new drill, and not every week has to have new stuff in it. Sometimes it's reinforcing. Sometimes it's layering on top. It's like, well, okay, this week, instead of going, we'll go our three lines again, but instead of going down screen, we're going to go flare screen. And there is no way on God's green earth are we sitting there saying flare screens will work in under 12s, because it will be an absolute disaster, as every kid now thinks they're Steph Curry or Caitlin Clark and they're coming off the flare
if
screen
the pass
to get
makes
there.
It there.
That's what I mean. It won't
the
even slow, get there.
Slow floating.
Exactly.
That's the wait yeah. for it.
Not a chance. But what you might get is a screen slipping.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the second they see that, and it's like, oh, now I get it. The screen isn't just for the shooter. It can actually be for the screener as well. Now you start to get a little bit of a teachable moment in there. So for mine, like in under 12s, I would just come up with bulk 2 and 3 player actions that I like, whether that be handoff, whether that be pistol, whether that be cross screen, down screen, take your pick. What I would introduce is probably a new action or read or shape or something like that once every fortnight. And say, well, okay, let's have a little play around out of this and see what happens. And you might get halfway through the year and go, gee, they're really good at that cross screen, down screen stuff. It's like, well, do they use it? Like, can they identify it themselves, or do you have to call it every time? Like, what's the deal in that sort of space? So I think everyone will be a little bit different as to what they want and how they want it. But, yeah, I think less is more. Like, if you're looking at trends, like, so if you are looking at trends, like Zoe, you hit on it at the very start, like a coach that might want to go horns. Like, I want to go all in on horns. Like, no worries. But you're probably only teaching horns, I would suggest, 2-on-2 to start off with.
Mm.
Like, then eventually you'd probably go to 3-on-2, then eventually you'd probably go to 3-on-3. And realistically, you probably don't even need a fourth player in most Horn stuff. Like, that's just the reality of what it is. But can you change the geography? So, you know, sometimes you might catch it on the pro line, as I believe it's called. Other times you might catch it on the elbow. Who knows?
I feel bad now. I shouldn't have said anything.
Don't, because it's going to be the first thing we say when we walk out of this podcast.
100% pro line.
Stop it.
So that might be the where the build-up and the layering comes from, I think. And that's, yeah. I think, the art of coaching when you go back into it is, well, you know, can I make the simple stuff – sorry, the complex stuff seem really simple? Because that's what players want. They want to be able to play. They want some freedom. And if we joystick coach everything, well, they're never going to get that.
But even from a senior perspective, any time I've put offenses in, it's never been, okay, 5-on-0, this is the offense. We've, you know, 2-on-2 or 3-on-3, the actions within it, and then we just stick them all together rather than just sort of showing it. Because I feel like showing the 5-on-0 as the offense becomes – that's where we become more robotic.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Whereas if we break the actions down and they start to go, oh, I could score off this, I could score off, I could slip here, I could, again, seniors are very different. Yeah. Yep. But I could do all of this. Then when we put it together as a as an offense, now we don't have to teach those counters or adjustments.
Well, and there was one I saw during the week and I did write it down actually because I meant to talk about it last week and forgot about it. It was a trainer on Instagram, DJ Sackman, who trains a lot of NBA guys and all that sort of stuff. And so his post was this CLA basketball trainer trend. Sorry I'm late, help me understand. Constraints and small-sided games are being talked about like there's some revolutionary new way to teach basketball. This is literally the most simple form of coaching, actually like the most basic to its core. Who doesn't do this? Another constraint can only take a player so far if they have mechanical issues. Another small-sided game or constraint is almost never going to fix the issue. The best coaches fuse. And I agree. Now, I am, to be completely open about it, small-sided games person, teaching games for understanding, call it what you want. I'm a big believer in small-sided games at training sessions. That does not absolve you of the duty of coaching. Mm-hmm. Like, you still have to teach. And I can promise you, in every small-sided games, there is something that can be done differently or better or adopted or whatever the case might be. There is so much. And if you're not sure what it is, just start with getting them open in the first place. Because we saw it on the weekend. The second the defense climbed in and took away the catch, everything came to a screeching halt. Even at one stage when we were doing that, like, and I only know it because you were standing next to me at the time, Zoe, the passer was so flat-footed to be able to throw the pass. And it's like, at no stage, as Zoe said, you can't take a dribble. But because they weren't told, they didn't do it. And it's only when they get told, all of a sudden it's like, oh, I can improve the angle of this entry pass by taking a bounce to the left, to the right, to whatever it is. Players will do what they're told to do. And that's a dangerous spot to be in, I think, for mine. We need to allow them to make their own mistakes. We need to allow them to make their own decisions. We need to allow them to make their own reads. The biggest thing is don't get so transfixed on this is the only way to coach and this now stops any feedback or any teaching or anything that goes with it. Because nearly, we'll say 9 months ago, we went to a Panathinaikos clinic where they taught.
And they were coaching. Yeah,
they coached. But they still played in games. Yes, they did some on-air stuff for sure.
It was more of a blend, right? It really was. It's sort of you're on this side where it's like let everyone make their own decisions and let the gameplay happen. And there's this side where you just want to dictate and be like that joystick coach. Really, you want to be in the middle of that.
Yeah.
That's it.
The sweet spot, I think.
That's all you want to do, yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, for those that want more on the constraints-led approach, obviously you can Google that. Like, there's so much stuff out there at the moment around that. If you want more information on that, we can point you in the direction of it as well. You're more than welcome to reach out, coaching@basketballvictoria.com.au. We can help you out with that. But yeah, just be careful that you're not all eggs in one basket, I think, with this sort of stuff. And the same goes with trends. Don't get transfixed on the latest new fad when there has been something there all the time, like catching the fish in your village instead of having to go and do more than you actually need to in the first place. So,
way to circle full back. Circle. I think I just ruined it, but look, way to circle back anyway. That was good.
Not at all, Nick. Always like being told that I've done something well. It rarely happens, so credit to you.
It's true.
I know the feeling. It's all good. I know the feeling. Yeah.
Coaches, thank you very much for jumping in, Nick and Zoe, obviously. Coaches, thanks very much for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode of the Talking Split Pod.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.